Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Happy Thursday, everybody. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt hanging with you here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Simple question today. It is Thursday. It's our last day on air. Sal Capaccio will be on tomorrow. Vibe check heading into the AFC Championship. How are you feeling? We got our first injury report yesterday. I think overall pretty good news. I think overall pretty solid.
Yeah, I would say, Josh. So. It wasn't anything like, you know, it wasn't perfect, obviously, but it was better than we expected.
No, the one thing I was genuinely terrified of, and we were hanging out like right after the show, and I'm sitting there like waiting with bated breath for
McDermott
to start.
Yeah.
All I needed to hear was Matt Milano wasn't technically hurt. It was just hamstring soreness. And it was like, all right, moving on. Time to get lunch. Let's go. Because, I mean, that was my one fear. You knew Benford would still be in concussion protocol, but he was limited, so that's good news. Mm-hmm. Deion Dawkins misses with an illness. You find that out a little bit later from the injury report. I'm not too concerned with that. It was a walkthrough. I imagine that's just more precaution of just like, hey, stay home.
Yeah. Like, just don't get anyone else sick and
to walk through.
Get better.
You've been here. You've done this. You get it. Taylor Rapp. Day-to-day, did not practice, but again, we've known he's been day-to-day. That's, I think, a good sign for him.
I think that's the key, is the fact that he's not like, oh, I don't know, like he's week-to-week. Like, that's the fact that he didn't practice, but it's only day-to-day sounds more promising.
Mm-hmm.
And especially, again, it's a walkthrough.
Yep.
Right? Like, that's the thing. It's like, it's not the end of the world if you miss a walkthrough. I'm not saying you should or anything, but...
But that was the one thing I was nervous about going into this, was the injuries. Because you've been healthy the whole year. It seems like every time you play the Chiefs, you're not healthy or something else is going on. Now, It's good. Here we go.
It is. I do love looking at like the injury report and seeing like, oh, Greg Rousseau, why is he on there? Finger full. Oh, okay.
We are really just putting everybody like, that like talks to a trainer.
Yeah, I'm like, what did he do? Did he get a paper cut? Like, what happened there? You know? So I think... Like I said before, it's not obviously perfect, but it's probably the best case scenario that we were expecting going into this week, because you kind of knew Christian Benford was going to be limited because of concussion protocol, and same thing with Taylor Rapp, but obviously not concussion protocol, just the fact that he was carted off the field with a hip injury, right? Like that alone was this kind of, you know, everyone's like, okay, hold your breath, let's see what happens here, but... Again, it's good news on the injury report. There's only two guys didn't practice yesterday, so.
How have you been feeling this week?
Has it
been getting a little more
nerve-wracking
for you?
I've been up and down. Like, when I'm here, it's funny. When I'm at work, I'm nervous. When I'm at home, I'm just like, yeah, let's just go. Let's just do it. Like, as soon as I get in my car, all my nerves go away. I'm listening to music. I'm like, yeah, they'll be fine. It'll be great. It'll be a great game. It'll be super fun. And they'll win for once. And, you know, they'll finally get over that hump. And then when I'm here, I'm like listening to all the sound and all and looking at all the old games. Like this morning in prep for tomorrow, I was getting some highlights from 13 Seconds. And I have never, ever rewatched or re-listened to any of the calls of 13 Seconds. And that alone just scared the crap out of me. And I'm like on an edge now. Like it's fluctuating with me. Like that's, I don't know what it is, but it's just like, it's getting to the point of the Ravens game where I'm like, okay, let's just get to Sunday. It's not been like that all week, but I'm getting to that point where I just want it to be 6:30 because I know on Sunday at noon it's going to take 24 hours to get to 6 o'clock. Like, not looking forward to that part of it.
That's going to be the worst. That will be the worst. I am like very cool.
Yeah.
Last week as the week went on, I was, you know, Monday, it was exciting. That was the matchup I wanted because I wanted a rematch. I thought the Bills matched up better.
I get
Not
that,
great,
yeah.
But it was better than week four. And then as the week went on, I was like, ooh, I don't love this. All right, let's go. And you know, I mentioned it yesterday with Aaron Quinn. I expected once the game had kicked off, I would relax. I'm working the whole thing. Let's go. And it was terrible. I had a stomach ache. I was not in a good headspace by any means. This week has been different. I have just been the same temperature, the same heart rate the whole time about it. I've watched a lot of previous championship games, not even Bills championship games. Like I've talked a lot about how in this playoff run, I've watched a lot of just old playoff games, full playoffs, what have you. I've watched a lot of stuff on Peyton Manning's career in the playoffs, Brett Favre's career in the playoffs, what have you. And I've been saying it a lot. It's not really founded in any kind of science because it's just a feeling, but it feels different this year for me. Where in the last 2 years, it was a lot of, I think they're running out of gas, I'm getting worried, I don't think they've got it this year, what have you. This year's completely different. And I look at a Chiefs team who is not great at stopping the run compared to Denver and Baltimore. They were the 3 and the 1, respectively, in stopping the run. And the Bills still had well above 55% success rate when running the ball. And then you look at who the Bills didn't have in that first matchup against Kansas City. Spencer Brown, who I think next year is going to have an all-pro campaign at right tackle. He has completely announced himself to the NFL world as one of the best right tackles. Deion Dawkins is great. And George Karlaftis is not a great run defender. They didn't have Spencer Brown this last game, last time around in week 11. I think they're going to be able to run the ball. They are one of the worst teams when it comes to covering the tight end. Who did the Bills not have last time? Dalton Kincaid. Now they've got Kincaid and Knox there. Mm-hmm. And then Shakir is playing at an incredible pop right now. He's got 13 targets, 12 catches, no drops.
Yeah, it's basically like the first, 5 weeks of the season where he didn't drop anything.
Yeah, where it was just automatic.
Yeah. I also think that part of my kind of vibe going into this game, I don't know why, but it hasn't really hit me yet that it's the AFC Championship game. I don't know if anyone else is feeling like that, but I just think of this for some reason as a divisional game again, because mm-hmm. it's been so many years since the Bills have been back to the AFC Championship game. And and it's a weird feeling. I can't really describe it. Like, the more I'm thinking about it, the more it's starting to hit me. But like, the Bills win this game, they go to the Super Bowl. And I think that is a whole different level of nervousness and stress.
Mm-hmm.
But none of that is kind of in the picture for me yet. And I wonder too, if that's in the minds of some of the players, because I read a thing this morning that I think it was 43 players on the Chiefs roster have all played in at least one AFC Championship game before.
I think it's 14 Bills.
14 Bills have played in one AFC Championship game before. That's a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's kind of by design, I guess, because if you think about it, the Bills did kind of shed a lot of the old names. They not necessarily just veterans, but just guys that have been on this team for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is a good thing because you can kind of say, okay, let's get ourselves right here. What we had was not working. Let's keep the pieces that are and move on. Another part of that is you now have everyone coming in or people that are coming in with a fresh mindset, a fresh slate of hey, this is my first time here. Think of Keon Coleman or even Dalton Kincaid, second year, sophomore season.
Mm-hmm.
This is their first taste of the NFL playoffs. Well, not necessarily for Kincaid, but for Coleman, it's his first taste of the NFL playoffs. And he's going all the way to the AFC Championship game. There's all these different things that kind of go into play here, I think. But one thing that's completely different about this Bills team than years past is it doesn't seem like any of these guys care about that. Amari Cooper had a great quote yesterday talking about, teams going to championships and things like that, and how you kind of just forget about everything else because you just need to do what the team needs you to do and keep going to work every day.
I also like that he mentioned, too, of course guys will want 10 to 20 targets in a game, but sometimes it doesn't matter. You just want to win the game.
Sometimes it doesn't need to happen. Sometimes the team doesn't need that. And that's such an interesting quote for me. Because it feels like most of the team is kind of having that same mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's really powerful. I think that's really infectious in a good way. And it's something that we haven't seen really from this Bills team before. Sure, they've been in the stage of, everyone doubted us and look, here we are. But mm-hmm. that's past. That was years ago now. That was back in 2020. That was back in 2021. And Now it's the point of, okay, you're expected to be here. Go out there and prove it. Because you know you can be here, you know you can do it, and then go do it. And I think that's kind of more powerful than the fact of like, oh, no one expected us to be here. Like, think of like what the Commanders are going through right now. Theirs is legitimate, no one expected us to be here. And that's fine because they're, it's a rookie year quarterback mm-hmm. in a year where you weren't even expected to make the playoffs.
They won, what, four games last year?
Yeah. And they, and then, what, flipped it to, was it 12?
They won 12 games this year, yeah.
So it's, you have a time and a place for that. And I'm glad that the Bills are really, really pushing past that because it didn't feel like they were pushing past the whole nobody expects us to be here sort of thing up until like the past year or two. But now it feels real because you have all these new guys. You have all these guys who haven't been here before and they're all working cohesively together on the fact of, guys, we know we can do this. Let's go out there and do it, right? It's the confidence that that brings.
Yeah, there has been a different attitude, I think, across the board for the whole team. McDermott's kind of gotten the whole like the brunt of it, and I don't mean that negatively, but most fans, I think, have sensed a difference in his personality and how he's talking to people, laughing a lot more when it comes to
his dad joke of the day.
Yeah, you know, it's even little stuff like me, like with post game. I work post game. A lot of it is kind of you're waiting for McDermott to jump on, because then we can kind of start moving. You know. The train can start moving. You know,
right,
we can
right.
start taking breaks, the whole thing. And, you know, there were times where you were waiting like 45 minutes for him. You're like, all right, dude, where are you?
Yeah.
Now, it feels like he's waiting for Allen to wrap up so that he can go talk.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And sure, they're winning a lot, so that changes a lot of things. They win all the time. This is not a team that is dealing with 9-8 seasons and oh, this happened to be a spontaneous, surprising 13-win season. They win double-digit games every year.
Right. I mean,
they flip between 11 and 13 wins.
They haven't had under 10 wins since 2018.
Mm-hmm.
That was a bad year. I didn't realize 2018. I forgot how
that was the legitimate, like, okay, we're rebuilding. We're gonna
yeah.
Back up.
Like you make the playoffs, you break the drought, and then I don't know why I just kind of forget that year existed.
I barely acknowledge 2018, which is of course Allen's rookie year. But I'm like, no,
right.
it was his rookie year. The whole roster was kind of building.
But I mean, even then too, you haven't had under 10 wins. Like you had 10 wins in 2019, then you had 13, 11, 13, 11, 13, and you know, there's a lot of people who would probably say you should have had 14 this year. I mean, granted, you played your backups against the Patriots at the end of the season.
Yeah.
So that did change things, but nobody really cares about that because the Patriots ended up making the Patriots things worse because then they don't get the first overall pick. But, I mean, like you said, this is a team that's used to winning, but it's winning in a different way. If that makes sense.
They look like, more like the Chiefs.
Yeah. They look more like, all right, cool, taken care of, let's move on. But it's not the oh, we're just waiting for the playoffs. It's the...
I'd argue kind of is.
Well,
they're playing playoff football constantly, which is limit the mistakes, get wins, get turnovers.
Oh, you're saying like in-game.
Yeah, like I think they are operating consistently as a playoff team.
Because I'm thinking like the outside fact, like the week leading up to the next game, it's like, oh yeah, here we are, we're playing. Oh, who are we playing this week? Oh, cool, the 49ers. Cool.
You mean just like it's a business-like approach.
Yeah. Like you didn't really have that this year, whereas I feel like in years past it maybe has sort of felt like that.
Mm-hmm.
But in-game, you're right. They are playing a playoff style of football because it's mistake-free. It's what can get us the points, what can make us control the game the best way. And that's how the best teams do it, whether it be regular season or the playoffs. And if that's what the Bills can continue to do from now on, then – sure. All you got to do now is get over this hurdle. You got to get over
it. It's the Chiefs.
It's not the hurdle being the AFC Championship game. It's the hurdle being the team you're playing. Because this would have been the same if it would have been the wild card round. You know, like somehow if the Bills and Chiefs matched up in the wild card round, we'd still be having the same conversation of just get past them and then figure everything else out. Because that's really all it is at this point. And I do feel like they can do it this year, but I'm nervous saying that. And I don't know why. Like, is it the past scar tissue or what?
But. Yeah, I think it's just past scar tissue. I think the only thing that makes me nervous is not – I don't think the team can do it. I think they can. I think they've proven this year they are different. It's more how important this game feels. We've talked about a lot this week is that 2020 kind of felt so fresh and new for a lot of us. You know, it's the first time that they were legitimately relevant since the early 90s.
What was the happy to be here feeling?
And there was a little bit of that happy to be here feeling. And while you made the playoffs the year prior, it was sort of this stunning, oh, the Bills can score a lot. And their quarterback went from, like, he's good, maybe. He's something. He's a weapon, too. He's just a great quarterback. And then all of a sudden you're in the AFC Championship. You know, it's a close game against the Colts and the Ravens. You had big moments there, but the fans were in the stands, so it was a little bit of this weird feeling, and then you were there. And then the last 3 years has been divisional round exits, mm-hmm. whether it be to Kansas City, to Cincinnati, and Kansas City again. Now you've got them again in an AFC Championship game in which they have not looked great the last 2 years. You have beaten them regularly in the regular season.
Handily, too, in some cases.
I think the thing that makes me most nervous is just how important this is, though, for, I think, McDermott, I think Allen, I think the Bills organization as a whole. I don't want to, like, sound negative, but I think it was the same thing, and I know Mike Shope has brought this up, too, of, you know, as big of a win as the Ravens win could be, it could all go away a week from then, this Sunday, where if you don't get past the Chiefs, does that Ravens win all of a sudden get kind of shuffled to the side a little bit, like the perfect game because of mm-hmm. what 13 seconds became?
I feel like that might be kind of – I think that's a kind of a recurring theme
mm-hmm.
because every – like you just said, I mean, the perfect game kind of gets overshadowed by the fact that 13 seconds happened a week later. And I feel like – so I feel like every year we kind of have this thought of like, oh, well, what's going to get forgotten this year? What game or what week – like, what few weeks are going to get forgotten because something crazy happens in the playoffs and you lose? Mm-hmm. Like, I think that there's so many things that get forgotten because of 13 seconds, because of the Bengals' loss, and because of even last year's, too. Like, there were a lot of moments last year where it felt like if you get the Chiefs here, everything's fine. And all of those moments kind of get forgotten because of the fact that you lost to the Chiefs in Buffalo, in Orchard Park. And so I don't think that that's necessarily, like, specific to this game. But I think in a season sense. But I think in a franchise sense, and if you're looking at careers mm-hmm. for Allen and McDermott and guys like that, that's where it's kind of this overarching thing of, like, a lot of things can get overshadowed if you don't win this game. Not necessarily this year, but from now and for the future.
Yeah.
Because if you're looking at this, if Mahomes wins this game, he becomes the first quarterback to defeat the same quarterback more than three times without mm-hmm. the other quarterback getting a win first.
Mm-hmm.
He's 3-0 right now against Allen. If he gets one more, he'll be the first quarterback in the playoffs. He'll be the first quarterback to ever do that. Also, he'll beat Tom Brady. He's tied with Tom Brady right now for the most touchdowns against a similar opponent in the playoffs. Brady has 8 touchdowns all time in the playoffs against the Jaguars. Mahomes has 8 touchdowns all time against the Bills in the playoffs.
Ew.
So he's going to beat that. He's got to throw one to beat Brady there.
If he wins Sunday, he passes Montana for most playoff wins.
Oh, jeez. All right, wait. We got to bring this back. We went down the negative trail.
There's a few things here, I think, that are coming up.
But there's a lot for everything that there is for Mahomes to beat. There's that much and more for the Bills and Allen to beat. I mean, you beat the stigma of you can't beat the Chiefs. You save the nation from another Chiefs Super Bowl.
There we go.
Like, the world is counting on you right now, aside from a small area in Missouri. Because
mm-hmm.
Kansas City, well, actually, I don't know how big the city is, but maybe it's not that small.
It's solid. Yeah, it's not bad.
It's a decent size. But
it's
a small
Chicago.
No. But a decent sized area in Missouri is the only thing rooting against you. Mm-hmm. Everyone else is on your side.
Maybe, would you even say the state of Kansas is rooting for the Bills?
Yeah.
I'm tired
of course. I mean, Patriots fans are rooting for the Bills.
Are they, though?
I don't think so. I don't think they.
I've seen clips. Oh. I've seen tweets. There are Patriots fans.
They may to preserve their dynasty.
Yep.
Because there is the feeling of, are the Chiefs going to pass us immediately after we're done?
You even have Miami fans. Granted, they're a little more devious in theirs, but they want the Bills to make it, so then they lose in the Super Bowl and go 0-5 in the Super Bowl.
By the way, yes, Patrick Mahomes and Joe Montana are currently tied for 16 playoff wins. So if Mahomes wins on Sunday, he'll have gotten 17. And both the Bills and Chiefs, just on early betting,
mm-hmm.
would be the favorites against either Philadelphia or Washington, whoever wins in the NFC. So likely looking at an 18th playoff win. And then it's just Brady. We're already kind of getting there where it's – which is another thing, too. We're getting there in their careers where they're no longer the fun young guys. they're the veterans.
Yeah, which is kind of a, like, you, it's a blink and you miss it sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Like, you go from they're rookies to, whoa, we're 7 years into their careers.
It just, it feels 6 years into their careers. It feels so massive. We all kind of knew it would. It's not surprising. I'm not, you know, inventing fire there by saying it. It feels so massive, so important to everyone's legacy. Everyone in this game has something they're fighting for. For the Chiefs, I heard on ESPN today, we'll see if we play that clip back as well. They're talking about, you know, Mahomes kind of trying to be the Jordan of the NFL, because Jordan did something in the NBA that hadn't been done since the 60s, which was a three-peat. The NFL's never had that. Mm-hmm. That could be a crowning achievement for Mahomes. No, you didn't beat Brady in the playoffs, but you did do something he never could.
Right.
You got three Super Bowls. And you kind of did it with teams that many would argue is not as talented as maybe your earlier iterations of your teams.
Oh, definitely this year and last year.
Reed is getting there arguably to the point of, are you the greatest coach of all time? Because of what you did with the Eagles. No, you didn't win a Super Bowl, but
you were really good.
You kept going to NFC Championships. Mm-hmm. You made it. You ultimately lost to the Patriots. But then you go to Kansas City, and you win three Super Bowls. You would win four.
Who's still ahead of him at this point?
Reed?
Yeah.
Because
it doesn't feel like there's that many people.
It feels like maybe just Belichick.
Is he?
I'd go Belichick, just in terms of just career longevity, achievements, the whole thing.
Sure,
but
longevity.
I'm fine with that.
But, I mean, as soon as Brady left, things went downhill for the Patriots. And
Reed had some disastrous years
in
Philadelphia,
sure,
too.
Sure, but it wasn't just the fact that they went downhill. It's that they were never going to get better. Like, they never looked like they were going to get better.
Well, I will say, Reed was fired after a 4-12 season. Which
True.
This
okay maybe the jury's still out.
Current day, it feels insane to say that Andy Reid was 4-12. They were like 8-8 and then 4-12.
Yeah,
and two straight years of no playoffs. So I mean, like, he's had his down years too, like Belichick did. That's the last thing we've seen of Belichick.
Maybe it is recency bias then.
Where with Reid, the recent thing we've seen is like, oh, they can't lose. Cool, that's love to see that.
Right.
And then you go to the Bills, and you know, it's even small things to me too of like guys setting up their careers. You know, Allen, I think we all kind of definitively assume is a Hall of Fame player. You know, when it's all said and done, will be. But Sean McDermott, potentially a Hall of Fame coach,
mm-hmm.
with you know his career going and stuff like that. If they go 4-0 in the playoffs this year, he's going to have a winning playoff record for probably the next few years. They win wild card games like it's their day job. You know, now we're winning divisional games, or at least we have. Allen, I've mentioned. What about guys like Spencer Brown? Or Terrell Bernard, who are relatively young in their careers mm-hmm. and putting
Christian
up
Benford.
Really good stats. Christian Benford are putting up good stats and can maybe start racking up you know, accolades because, well, you're on a Super Bowl winning team. Mm-hmm. There's a few guys I think of that, like, you know, that. McDermott, though, I tweeted it out today, too, because he, unsurprisingly, because it's just at this rate, is not named one of the finalists for Coach of the Year. I don't want to say I'm a McDermott apologist. I do have those tendencies at times, though, with him.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd like him to earn some damn respect in this room.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
I don't mean this room, but like,
no,
what was Dan Campbell's expectations that he has to be the favorite for Coach of the Year? Your expectations were win the Super Bowl. Good for you. You were the one seed. You did exactly what everyone expected.
And then you lost.
And then you lost. And I get it. It's a regular season award. But then you lost. McDermott's mm-hmm. expectations, I don't want to say like by everybody, was that you weren't going to be as good, but any talk show was, well, this is the year the Dolphins are going to do it. This is the year the Jets are going to do it. Yeah, the Bills are in a transition. I don't know what they're going to do. They won 13 games. You already argued it. If the one seed was still available, they play all their stars against the Patriots, they go 14-2 or 14-3.
Mm-hmm.
They locked up the division in November. They're in the AFC Championship. I want him to get some respect, and a Super Bowl does that.
Yeah, I mean, the other candidates were, it was Dan Quinn.
Fine.
Dan Campbell.
No.
Andy Reid.
No, it's the same thing. Your expectations were to win the Super Bowl.
Right.
You're the one seed. Good for you.
Right, and you limped to a record of 15-2.
Dan Quinn and Kevin O'Connell. Those are my.
Yeah.
Those
guys
are the two
are
that
fine.
I'm fine.
Right, but other
everyone
than that,
else, what were your expectations? Good, you met them. good. Congratulations.
Mm-hmm.
Frustrates me to no end. And then we'll get to some of the awards as well. Got to take a quick timeout here. 803-0550, the number two call. Alan, Jason, we'll get to you guys here after a quick timeout. We'll talk more on the Bills as well, especially in the 11 o'clock hour. Alex Brasky of Batavia Daily will join us at 11. Sal Capaccio at 11:30. Vibe check, as this is mine and Josh's last day here on the mid-morning run. for this week. Where are you feeling on a Thursday for Bills Chiefs, the AFC Championship game? Love to hear your thoughts. Again, 803-0550, the number to call. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR.
You always remember the feeling of not pulling through. It sticks with you for a while, and it really doesn't leave. But again, I think every year that you go through in this league, you've learned more things about yourself, about your team, about the game of football. You know, we're just grateful and humbled to have another opportunity at it. It's another week that we get to play, because really there's only four teams playing right now. So we look at that, and you know, we just love the opportunity that we have.
Buffalo Bills quarterback Josh Allen. It's also kind of cool seeing the new backdrop for like every team.
Yeah.
So I saw a few Washington players playing, and it was like, now they got the NFC Championship game banner. Bills, Chiefs have the AFC Championship. Man, I cannot wait. Cannot wait for Sunday. Game start at 3 o'clock with Philadelphia hosting Washington, and then 6:30 is our game, Bills at Kansas City. Let's get connected to our fans, brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. How are you feeling on a Thursday as we get ready for the AFC Championship? We will start today with Alan on the line. Alan, how are we doing this morning?
Good. How are you guys? First of all, when that Houston game ended last week, I said to my son, oh my gosh, we got to get this Chiefs team. Holy cow. Houston went up and down the field on that team. And I'll say this, and I said it again, if Fairbairn doesn't miss that extra point to tie the game, I think it's a different game. I think that took the morale right out of the team. And you look, 10 minutes and 30 seconds they held the ball at the start of the fourth quarter. Chiefs had no answer. None. They couldn't stop Mixon. Mixon was running all over the place. Over the middle was that tight end. I can't remember his name. Houston's tight end. But my other point is this. Last week, I was very nervous when we played the Ravens. I said, you know, I still believe we're going to beat them. We're going to find a way to win because that's Buffalo's Bills football. But I was nervous. If the Ravens were to play the Chiefs, I think with Henry, they would have pounded them. I think the Ravens are a better team. I feel great about this game. I picked the Bills 30-17. I personally think the Chiefs are going to get a late touchdown or a late field goal, and I don't think this is going to be close. I think Buffalo's on a mission. You can't lose four of these games in a row to this team. I mean, you can.
Yep.
But you can't. You just can't. Mm-hmm. Allen wants, you know, Allen's not in his third year anymore, second year. He had a phenomenal year. And I know people say, oh, the Chiefs are upset because of the first game. Cincinnati went in there three years ago. And the way they beat Mahomes, they didn't let Tyreke Hill try a few trick plays. They stopped him, and they got to Mahomes. They pressured him. I think Mahomes even fumbled once, if I'm not mistaken, like around the 30, 35. And they were in his face. And they should have beat him, I think, the next year when they had him in the championship game. And I think there was a couple – I mean, I'm not going to go there. I'm not one to complain. A couple bad calls at the end of the game that Cincinnati fans were going crazy. But I thought they outplayed him then.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, thank you. And I'll just hang up and listen to you. Have a good one.
Thanks for the call, man. I like that you brought up that drive, too, to start the third quarter. I thought Houston was masterful on that drive. I think it was to open up the third quarter. Mixon ends up finishing off with a 13-yard touchdown run. And then, yeah, like you brought up, Kymie Fairbairn's missed extra point, keeps it at 13-12. They then have the touchdown pass to Kelce, and it kind of gets away from them. But we brought this up yesterday with Aaron Quinn, and I think Sal as well, where, yes, every team that lost – on divisional weekend, outgained their opponent.
Mm-hmm.
The difference really was the turnover battle. Washington was plus +5, Bills were plus +3, I think Philadelphia was plus +1. The difference was that Houston and Kansas City were even at 0. It was really, you know, CJ Stroud's taking terrible sacks that was kind of killing drives. They had a few moments that were just missed. Kymie Fairbairn misses that extra point. He also misses a field goal earlier in the game as well.
There was just like, I feel like it's those mental mistakes that we have seen other teams do against the Chiefs in the past. And that's kind of like, not to completely discredit the Chiefs, but that's a big part of how they win these games sometimes. I mean, there's days where you see Patrick Mahomes is not Patrick Mahomes and their offense is not working. And especially since Tyreek Hill has left. And they still somehow pull these wins out because of the fact that the other team is making these mental mistakes. I think it's partially on the Texans specifically. I think it's partially on CJ Stroud just being, it's his second year. He's still getting into the groove of the NFL, and things did not go as planned at all this year, I don't think, for Houston. I mean, Houston was kind of expected to be this AFC powerhouse, and granted, they did have some injuries. They were very all over the place all season long. So I think that partially plays into that specific matchup. But in terms of looking at the Chiefs overall, like look at the Week 11 game. Mm. The Bills played smart, mental, mistake-free football. They had one turnover, sure, but it didn't affect the game. They didn't let that affect them. They went out and got two turnovers of their own and still kept control of the game. That's the key against these guys, against these Chiefs, is you have to just control it in your way. Let them think they're playing their game, but just control it and play it your way. And that's like the best way to beat this version of the Chiefs.
Mm-hmm.
Before it was you just got to outgun them. Now it's you have to outplay them, and I think the Bills can easily do that. They did that to the Ravens, who looked to have the better advantage all over the board.
And I agree with Alan too on the call, because I was saying it last week that the winner of Bills Ravens I thought would go on to beat the Chiefs. I think they're both playing better football than the Chiefs. Yeah. You also look at it too. Going back to that Week 11 matchup, the big thing we were talking about was third down efficiency and just how exceptional Kansas City was at it. I think they were close to a 50% pop every third down. They were first in the league, what have you. Against Houston, they were 4 for 11 on third downs.
Yeah,
212 total yards. They won that game off of bad mistakes by Houston. When I say that, I mean more Kyme Fairburn's misses and 8 sacks on C.J. Stroud. That's what won them the game. It was not anything that he did on offense. Dalton Schultz was the tight end Alan, the caller, was talking about. He went 4 for 4 for 63 yards.
Yeah.
That's close to the stat line going back to Week 11 that Dawson Knox had. And for much of the year this year, Dawson Knox has kind of been up and down. I don't really know why he's there with Kincaid. He had 6 targets for 4 catches, 40 yards against the Chiefs back in Week 11. You wonder how Kincaid's going to go, especially with how good the Bills are at tight end top to bottom. They're not great necessarily, but they have good NFL tight ends. And how bad Kansas City is at defending that position specifically. Khalil Shakir was also somebody that went off. That was one of his early games. I think he had like 8 catches or 6 to 8 catches, something like that. But he was targeted a lot. He attacked the middle of the field. This is not the Ravens game. Right. I think that's the key thing to remember here. The Ravens matched up better defensively to stop the Bills from scoring. We maybe didn't talk about it nearly as enough as maybe we should have, because we're talking a lot about stopping Henry and such. But I think the Ravens matched up better at slowing the Bills down, really making life difficult. The Bills, though, were able to still find success running the ball like they did against Denver. I think they can do both against Kansas City, and I think that's the key. I do think they're going to score 30. I don't know if it's going to be necessarily 30-17, like the caller Alan was saying there, and maybe a late touchdown as well to make the score look a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they're going to put up 30. I do. I think they can move the ball on this Kansas City team.
I think an interesting thing to look at, like if you want to – let's say get away from Chiefs-Texans, because that was a game where if you're watching it, you're kind of getting frustrated with the Chiefs, right? Like if you want to look at a different...
Yeah, I hated the whole game.
Right. But if you want to look at a different thing that you can kind of almost compare it to in terms of how the Chiefs were able to win that game, look at the week before, Rams-Vikings in the wild card round.
Mm-hmm.
The Vikings had the better team, I think. Overall, like performance-wise throughout the whole season, they had the better team. Mental mistakes are why they lost that game. Sam Darnold was sacked 9 times against the Rams.
So bad.
It was really awful. The Rams were outplayed by Darnold still in the throwing game. I mean, sure, it was only 45 yards. Like Matthew Stafford had 209 yards and Darnold had 245.
Well, they got away from it. I mean, the Rams were up so early that...
Right.
Vikings needed to throw.
Right. Even though they kind of did. But even if you look at like the team stats, like it was still pretty even. But the fact that you have sacked 9 times, the Rams were 2 for 10 on third down.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, they just never got on
the Vikings. The Vikings were 6 for 17. It's just if you want to just not look at a Chiefs game for this, look at a game like this where it. Yes, sure. Maybe the Rams in the moment were better than the Vikings, but overall, I think the Vikings could have been better and beaten the Rams.
2 for 10, wow.
Yeah, but that game had a lot of mental mistakes in it from the Vikings offense specifically. But that's something that you have to just avoid against a team like the Chiefs. You avoid that against any team, really, and you win the game. Mm-hmm. You make the least amount of mental mistakes that lead to on-field mistakes, and that's how you win it. That's how you win the turnover battle. That's how you win time of possession.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that, broken down. And I think that the Bills have really done that well this year.
Yeah, they
especially
keep doing
with
it.
The evolution of Allen.
As much as maybe people are thinking like, all right, it's gonna slow down eventually. It hasn't.
Right.
So I've now hit a point with at most two games left. It's not going to stop this year.
Mm-hmm.
This is how they're going to win games, and they're going to keep winning games. It probably will stop at some point next year.
Sure.
I can't now bank on it or get worried that it's going to stop this year because it hasn't.
But listening to Josh Allen talk yesterday too, and he kind of made the joke about that lateral with James Cook, right? Like where it was like, yeah, the good guy won on that one. Like,
yeah,
it's funny, but it also shows you like how much he's actually grown and how much he's changed his mindset, if you will.
He really thought about doing it.
He did. I honestly think he could have done it.
Like a psycho.
I really think he could have done it. I had faith in him. If he threw that lateral was going to be touchdown. But I'm glad we didn't have to find out because that would have been terrifying.
I'm glad we didn't have to deal with that. Next up is Jason on the line. Jason, how are we doing this morning?
Great. I agree with Alan. I'm so confident about this game. I mean, the Chiefs have a pretty record, but they failed the sniff test. They've been getting by in smoke and mirrors all year. And like you said, on other people's mistakes, and the Bills simply aren't making them. I mean, their defensive backfield is healthy and high functioning. Their running game, they could throw anybody in, and I think they'll run all over the Chiefs. I'm just really confident. I think the coaching staff is in a better position than they were in past games. I think the mindset's right. And I think it's going to be a big win, and I think it's going to be an easy win.
Jason, thanks for the call. I love the phrasing of they don't pass the sniff test. That's so good. And there's no better way to say it than they just don't pass the sniff test. Mm-hmm. They have a pretty record, like Jason just said there, but they haven't looked great really all year. They had two games to end the year where it was like, ooh, maybe they figured it out. Here they come. But then you looked at the teams and it was like, oh, it's Pittsburgh and Houston. Mm-hmm. Okay, all right. And then we get to the playoffs, and sure, there's always an argument for rust versus rest. I get it. But then we get into the playoffs and they get by on 212 yards, but they got 8 sacks on a quarterback who has a really bad offensive line.
Yeah.
And seems to be prone to getting sacked and to taking bad sacks. Where Allen is sacked the least amount in the NFL. And unlike the last matchup, their potential, all-world right tackle is in. And they're healthy in the offensive line. And like the caller brought up, they kind of can throw at anyone they want to run the ball, and it's working. Ty Johnson's the guy that gets the game-clinching first down.
Yeah, on a huge run, too. Big run from him. Like, and that's the thing, is like, when you have guys like Ty Johnson contributing, like where it's like we had the conversation last week, that Baltimore caller. Oh, like Justice Hill, I think he'll do something. Who's Justice Hill? Well, a lot of people would probably say, who's Ty Johnson? To us, he's great, but
he's the guy.
It's the unknown players that really do it to you in these playoff games. That's the guys that step up and step out of the woodwork and get things done.
Mm-hmm. And Johnson continues to make plays for them. Cook continues to make plays for them. Ray Davis,
by the way.
Comes back from concussion and is having crucial runs.
Mm-hmm. Looks fantastic.
Looks good.
Too. Yep. Yeah. To go back to the caller's point too, not passing the sniff test. All season, the Chiefs have reminded me of the 2020 Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah, they just happen to win a playoff game.
Yeah, sure. But every single game, it felt like they were the 2020 Pittsburgh Steelers. Because there were games in that run for the Steelers where they were blowing teams out and winning by a lot. And then there were a lot of games where it was very close.
Yeah.
And it was like, whoa, this could end and go down in a blaze of glory.
They said a typical Steeler ending of the season where it's like, oh, and you're bad. Okay.
Yeah, then they lost three.
And they go into the playoffs. Bad.
They lost four out of the last five games.
Yeah.
And went to the playoffs 12-4, lost 48-37 to the Cleveland Browns.
803-0550, the number to call. Coming up in just under 15 minutes, Alex Brasky, Batavia Daly is going to join the show, talk a little bit more Bills and Chiefs. What are his thoughts going into Sunday? We'll also be joined by Sal Capaccio at 11:30. Bills, their first real practice today. We'll also get a little bit of the word, though, on the injury report from yesterday. What are Sal's feelings as well going into this game? Zach Jones, Josh Mann here in the Northtown Automotive X Point Show. This is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones, Josh Mann, hanging with you here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Real quick segment here before we get to Alex Brasky at the top of the hour. The Jacksonville Jaguars. did in fact move off of Trent Baalke, their GM since 2021. He's been with the organization since 2020. Oh, man. I mean, just what a bad situation they're in. Liam Cohen, while on the show, we found out that Liam Cohen was pulling himself from consideration for the Jacksonville head coaching job. And then within like 4 or 5 hours, the news broke that Jacksonville was parting ways with Alex Brasky. They weren't firing him. They were parting ways, because that's the nice way to say it. What a tire fire. What a joke of an organization. Everyone and their mother was telling you, if he's still the GM, you're going to be limited in coaching prospects.
Mm-hmm.
Shad Khan looked himself in the mirror and went, not today, Satan. I'm going to prove something. And then 3 weeks later, he fires him. Some conviction.
And misses out on Ben Johnson and Liam Cohen.
Maybe Liam Cohen. I don't think he has signed an official extension with Tampa. So they say,
I think he's kind of missed out on him.
But I mean this honestly. Have some conviction. You wanted to keep him and hire Robert Saleh, because that appeared to be the favorite. You wanted to keep him. Let's go.
Yeah.
Don't you know, dance around the idea. No, you want to keep him. Because now, what are we doing here? You missed out on all the good coordinators because Aaron Glenn's taken up, Ben Johnson's taken up, Joe Brady's still playing. Cliff Kingsbury's still playing, so maybe you have an option at them. But now you look like a choke.
Yeah.
You look like a disaster. If I'm Liam Cohen, I'm getting on my phone laughing, hanging up. That's my whole thing that I'm doing.
And also, who's going to be their next GM? Like, who wants to go into that situation where the owner can't make concrete decisions?
Can't make a decision. Yeah, just can't make a decision.
Like, sure, you get to work with I saw a picture of Patrick Mahomes. You get to work with Trevor Lawrence.
In a bad division.
In a bad division, but you have to work with potentially a bad owner. Like, that's not inviting for either head coach or GM.
And you get to play in London every year.
Yay.
Although you do get a new stadium here coming up.
You're in Florida.
It's like renovated stadium. It's not, I don't think it's new. It's
Going to be renovated? Well,
it's going to basically be uber modernized.
Yeah.
Modernized.
Are they still going to have the pool? That's all that matters. That matters.
If more sports stadiums need pools.
I don't know if more.
If you're all of the Florida stadiums. If you're in a hot state, you should have a pool in your stadium and have that be an option for fans.
That feels right.
Yeah. About every baseball park has a pool.
The Diamondbacks, theirs is really cool.
If it's Arizona, that makes sense. If you don't, it's a health concern.
Because not the whole stadium has a pool.
Well, no, but they put it there and they're like, all right, we're done. Now we're good.
I guess. I just think
it's more I like the idea of the Yankees are we put a pool and everyone's like, for what?
No, see, that would be weird. But now if you draw a line across the middle of the country, specifically for baseball teams, have hot tubs in the colder states and have pools in the lower states.
I can get with it. That's all I need in this new renovated stadium for Jacksonville. Have a pool. That's it. 803-0550, the number two call. Coming up after a quick timeout, Alex Brasky of Batavia Daily joins the show talking more on the Bills. We might throw some Sabres questions in there. He's got some of his listeners and readers kind of getting after him on it. So maybe we'll have some fun with that. Zach Jones, Josh Mint hanging out with you here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
I'm very satisfied. I've never been this far in the playoffs. Obviously every receiver wants to have, 10, 20 catches a game, but that's not always how the cookie crumbles, and it's not always the most beneficial thing for the team, force feeding, one guy the ball just for the sake of that. Winning is obviously way more important, and there's many ways to win. We're getting a job done, so, absolutely no complaints from me, because that's all I truly want. I mean, I've had it every other way and haven't really reached the pinnacle of the sport how I would have liked. So.
Buffalo Bills wide receiver Amari Cooper. Yeah, but I would like to see him have 8 catches, 150 yards, and 2 touchdowns.
It'd be really nice. I think it'd be fun. Because that first game against the Titans when he just came out, literally, Keon Coleman was like, go that way. And he's like, okay. And then he caught a touchdown. It's like, come on. Let's just see that again.
I like that we had the full experience because his first target was a drop. And that was the whole thing leading up to the game. It was just drop the ball a little bit. And the first pass, it's just a little dump off. Next play, go over there. Go. You got this. You got this.
See touchdown. That? See that? See the field goal post right there. Run towards
just
that.
Run
and
that,
turn around.
That way. I feel like I have been waiting for the Amari Cooper game, but he has had pop plays, including against Kansas City, where with a cast on his hand, because this team in the middle part of the year just all had injured wrists. He just had a gorgeous catch. It's a beautiful throw by Allen. He makes a perfect catch. I think Cooper could have a role in this game. I think, though, it could be more the tight ends and guys like Khalil Shakir. But for more on this game and this Bills season as a whole, we go to the Western Hotline as Alex Braske of Batavia Daily joins us today. Alex, how are we doing this morning, man?
Yeah, I'm doing well, guys. Not really much to say here. We're 3 days away from the biggest battle in our professional lives. What a time to be alive.
Yeah, where's the nerve level at for you? Because I was telling our guest yesterday, Aaron Quinn, that for Baltimore, I was way more nervous. I thought I'd be better the day of the game. I only got worse until the final score. Where are you sitting right now?
Yeah, I grew up a diehard Bills fan, season ticket holder, going through hell in the 300 level. I was there for the Pittsburgh Steelers win, using their backups to oust the Bills from playoff contention. I was there for the snow game against the Indianapolis Colts. So I've been through the battles with Bills Mafia in the past. Now, covering the team over the past few years, that fandom certainly has waned a little bit. The passion has gone by the wayside due to necessity and just being so close to the team. But for these playoff games, you definitely start to feel a bit of angst, a bit of anxiety. And you can ask my press box mate at Highmark Stadium, Mookie Hawkins. There were a few times in that game where I was grabbing his shoulder just with the thrilling game that was going on. And it's tough to put that aside, but to answer your question going into this week, I'm trying to maintain a level head, but certainly there is some anxiety there as we get closer to the game in Kansas City.
Alex, I'm right there with you. I mean, I was at the game, and it was very up and down for me, too. There was a nice older gentleman sitting next to me just saying, don't worry, we'll be fine. Dude, same thing happened in the Broncos game when the Ravens scored that first touchdown. But now I'm, like, constantly fluctuating, right? Like, I don't know if you're in the same boat, but parts of the day you feel confident about the game. Another part of the day you're thinking about it and you're getting nervous, like, I just need it to be 6:30 on Sunday night, and it feels like it's a whole week away when it's only 3 days away, right? Like, it feels like it's going to take forever to get here. But I think that this game gets so much attention from around the nation, and I think that brings so much more into our heads, right? Like, the fact that it feels like the entire country wants the Bills to win this game kind of amplifies everything for us, right?
Yeah, for sure. Deion Dawkins said it midway through the season. The Bills have turned into America's team of sorts over the years. Now, if you look back to those four straight Super Bowl appearances, I think the national fan base grew sick of the Bills and really wanted to see another AFC team advance to that big game. I think three straight losses was enough for everybody, and then the fourth kind of really annoyed people with the Bills. But after the long playoff drought and with Josh Allen at quarterback, this team has really turned into, I don't want to say lovable losers, because obviously they've been winning quite a bit over the past few years. But, yes, I would agree with you wholeheartedly. I think going into this game, not only with the factor of the two-time defending champion Chiefs ripping the heart out of every fan base in the NFL and those fan bases now wanting to see the same done to the Chiefs, but I think it's also just a sense of this team and how that they've grown on the national fan base. I mentioned Josh Allen, Deion Dawkins, obviously an exciting personality as well, and I think this fan base has done a great job being ambassadors for the franchise as well. You see them donate over $80,000 to Mark Andrews' charity after dropping that two-point conversion attempt near the goal line, so I think they built up a lot of goodwill around the country, and I think this weekend you'll see on social media a wave of support for the Bills in this one against the Chiefs.
Alex, you brought up Deion Dawkins there, and I kind of want to talk about the offensive line all the time with the Bills. I think they're one of the best units in the entire NFL. I think there's a lot of fun personalities on there. Deion kind of just loves doing any appearance he can in season, off season. I've always liked Spencer Brown. I'll always remember I went to that Houston Texans monsoon game in his rookie year, and as like a fourth round rookie, he's doing like year two short to Houston Texans players, and he's just always just kind of been that guy for me. But this unit really in being sort of a rebuilt unit for this year, with obviously the moving on from Mitch Morris, Alex, you tell me, but it seems like all year they've just been fantastic.
Absolutely. I was concerned with the transition that they were going to make up front this year. I think I was one of the few before the season that was a bit reserved in terms of what to expect from a new center and Connor McGovern, as you mentioned, David Edwards at left guard, and losing a veteran presence in Mitch Morris. But boy, what they've done this season has really been transformative in the running game, particularly. I think they've transformed their identity to a more physical, in your face, get after you, maul you in the running game mentality when it comes to their offensive line. And I think that starts with McGovern and Edwards, and obviously Alec Anderson bringing him in as a sixth offensive lineman on a regular basis. I think that shift has helped this team tremendously. I'm not saying that what Mitch Morris brought to the table wasn't effective in what he had to offer, but I think what this team needed in this era of Josh Allen leading this team, you needed more physicality up front. You needed the ability to run the ball. You needed more of a balanced offense. And I think it's all started along that offensive line. You saw Joe Brady up for assistant coach of the year, and it makes sense. You often see coordinators get those nods. But I think if there was any time to give it to a positional coach, it was Aaron Cromer. The job he's done over these past few years, not only keeping this team consistent in their performance, but keeping them upright, keeping them healthy, and also being able to transition, like I said, from what they were last year to this year. It's been an incredible job all around.
On the Western Hotline, Alex Braske of Batavia Daily. Alex, you brought up there Joe Brady being one of the finalists for Assistant Coach of the Year for the AP. A coach that I feel like he's had to have won one of these already, he hasn't yet, is Sean McDermott. He still is not getting any credit for Coach of the Year. It does frustrate me a little bit. I mean, I said it today that, you know, both on Twitter and on the air, like I kind of almost want the Bills to win a Super Bowl just so he gets some respect. In 2017, he doesn't win it after he ends the longest playoff drought in the sport in his first year. And we're still here. And going into this season, it was a year in transition. It was kind of openly, you know, broadcasted as such. And all they do is win the division first of any team in the league. They're 13 wins again. They could have been 14 if the one seed was still in play. They would have played their starters against New England. All they do is keep winning. And he's just kind of, it seems like a little bit of an afterthought. Like what are your thoughts on him not even getting a nod for Coach of the Year? Where guys like Dan Campbell, who like the expectations were to be the one seed and go to the Super Bowl, and he did that. It really didn't change much.
Yeah, if you've followed me on Twitter over the years, I think anybody who's done so is very well aware of how I feel about Sean McDermott. I think it's insane that Sean McDermott isn't up for Coach of the Year this season. I've expressed that opinion on Twitter since really kind of mid-season. I thought that he should have been in the conversation, but if you've looked at sports books throughout the course of the season, he's never really been up there. And I think the five candidates, the five finalists, they're all quality candidates, right? You look at Dan Campbell with the Detroit Lions. You look at Kevin O'Connell of the Minnesota Vikings, Sean Payton of the Denver Broncos, Dan Quinn of the Washington Commanders, and Andy Reid of the Kansas City Chiefs. I think when you look at what Payton, O'Connell, and Quinn have done, sure, they are undoubtedly probably the three front runners. Peyton bringing the Broncos back from basically the doldrums, Dan Quinn doing the same in Washington, and Kevin O'Connell somehow making something out of Sam Darnold. We saw him turn back into a pumpkin during the playoffs. So I think those three, much more than deserving of a nod in terms of a finalist for Coach of the Year, but Dan Campbell and Andy Reid don't really ring as true to me. Campbell, I'm not sure what people expected from the Lions this season. Now, I know they went through a boatload of injuries. I think that perhaps played a role in the voters' minds. But when you have two coordinators that are now head coaches in the league, it just asks the question, how deserving is Dan Campbell of Coach of the Year finalist honor? And then you look at Andy Reid, a two-time defending champion. I know it's mighty difficult to repeat that success, and maybe that's what the voters pointed to in putting him up there in this top five. But you have the best quarterback in the league, perhaps the best quarterback in NFL history. You have a future Hall of Fame tight end. You have a future Hall of Fame coordinator, perhaps, in Steve Spagnuolo. So I just don't think that Campbell and Reid have done anything to warrant that honor more so than Sean McDermott. You mentioned the changeover that he's had to go through on the roster. Look at the two new coordinators that he's had to help along this year. I know Joe Brady has had a bit more experience, took over midway through last year, but Bobby Babich, a green defensive coordinator. You lose your two starting safeties on the back end who are also captain material over the years, and you've also dealt with your fair share of injuries with Matt Milano missing plenty of time and a few others missing time here and there. So, and that's not to mention the wide receiver position. So if you follow me on Twitter, you know how I feel about Sean McDermott. I don't think he's not only one of the best coaches in the NFL, he's one of the best coaches in sports.
Alex, talking more on coaches, one of the coaches that did get nominated from the Bills, Joe Brady, what do you make of his season here with the Bills? I mean, there's a lot of talk of him getting head coaching opportunities potentially. Do you think, like, what's the vibe if he does leave? And if he does stay, like, how much does this offense evolve next year? Like, what are the two avenues there, I guess, if you want to put it that way?
The job that I think he has the best opportunity to get is the Saints job. I think I saw a report this morning that he will interview with them in person. I think last week you could only interview virtually. I think this week coaches are allowed to interview in person. It's kind of disappointing how the NFL does that, allowing coaches to begin that cycle before the season is all the way through, kind of taking their attention away. But if you heard, I think it was Kellen Moore of the Philadelphia Eagles, I think he's with now, he interviewed for the Cowboys job, and he said, I think the only thing he missed this past week was a fourth grade basketball game for his son or daughter. So I think these coaches do a relatively good job compartmentalizing and making sure that they stay committed to the team that they're currently employed with, but I'm just not so sure the process that the NFL employs is as conducive to teams that are still alive in the playoffs as it could be, but I guess I digress on that. If you look at the Bills' offense, they've really retooled with three different offensive coordinators with Josh Allen. Dating back to when Brian Daboll left, everybody said that Josh Allen would never be the same without Daboll. And then look at him last year. I know that there were some struggles, but you look at Ken Dorsey now being ousted from his position as Browns' offensive coordinator. So I think Josh Allen really made the best of maybe a mediocre hand that he was dealt last year. And then this year, there's no doubt that Joe Brady has done a phenomenal job introducing the running game a little bit, but I think that's also had to do with personnel and who Brandon Bean has brought in and the adjustments that they've made in that regard. So I'm not so sure that Josh Allen is dependent upon an offensive coordinator as much as some may like to think. I think offensive coordinators may be a bit more dependent on Josh Allen's talents. And if you look forward, there are names that have been mentioned in terms of offensive coordinator candidates. If Joe Brady is to leave this offseason, the hot name is Davis Webb, has spent some time here in Buffalo. He's now a quarterback's coach with the Broncos. He's expressed his interest in becoming a coach down the road, dating back to his time playing for the Bills, and I believe he has a great relationship with Josh Allen, and we all know how important that is when the Bills
go out and hire particularly a quarterback's coach. And that brings me to the next candidate, Ronald Curry. He's been the quarterback's coach for the team this season. I think he's another name you have to consider. The relationship that he's built with Josh Allen this year, and I think that would be a relatively seamless transition if you were to go from Brady to Curry.
And I think with Curry as well, Alex, that he was in New Orleans, and there was sort of this feeling it was between him and whoever their offense coordinator is now, but they ultimately go with where they went. Curry ends up going to Buffalo. So you could argue it's sort of the same thing with Joe Brady. There was this sort of – they always had somewhat of a transition process. I always felt that when they brought Brady in, it was, all right, if Dorsey either gets fired or leaves for a head coaching position – we've got the next guy kind of, you know, right there ready to go and building a relationship with Allen in the offense as we go. Alex, last thing for me, we've obviously spent a lot of time on Bills Chiefs, of course, but the NFC side of things is kind of cool. It's an NFC East matchup. Jaden Daniels has burst onto the scene. The Eagles, I think, are maybe the most talented team in football, but have kind of looked ugly. What do you think about that matchup? It starts our Sunday at 3 o'clock.
I didn't give Washington any chance to win this past week. I thought they overextended themselves in the first round. I thought that they would be relatively satisfied with that, taking into account what they dealt with last year and really the resurgent season they had under Dan Quinn. But I'll tell you what, this Jaden Daniels, he's mighty, mighty impressive. Rookie quarterbacks typically don't fare well during the postseason. He's really turned that narrative on its head. I give them a chance to win this game, but you look at Nick Sirianni's record in the playoffs. I know he's a bit of a fool, and during the regular season there's been some rocky road that they've had to travel. But listen, come playoff time, I know it's a cliche, it's about running the football. They have the best running back in the league in Saquon Barkley. They're a battle-tested roster. Jalen Hurts seems to be unfazed by anything that's thrown his way, although I don't think he's one of the best quarterbacks in the league. I think he's one of the best quarterbacks in terms of handling the pressure and performing under the bright lights. So give me the Eagles in this game, but I'm going to eat my words from last week. It wouldn't shock me if the Commanders are able to pull off the upset.
Should be a really good game. Alex, man, thanks for jumping on with us this morning. Enjoy the game on Sunday. Hopefully we're talking about a Super Bowl here for 2 weeks, man. Thanks for jumping on with us.
You got it, guys. Thanks for having me.
That was Alex Brasky of Batavia Daily on the West Her Hotline. Yeah, the Commanders, they felt like go back, Josh, to when we were talking about the wild card weekend. It felt like they're cool. I give them maybe the best chance for like a rookie to win on the road of anyone, but I didn't anticipate this.
I did. Oh, I didn't anticipate this. No. I picked them to win, though.
I picked Tampa.
You wrote them off.
I picked Tampa. Yeah, because I picked, I think, all the favorites, but I did not expect this. Even then, you look at the Detroit game, even without the turnovers.
That one I was very surprised by.
But even without the turnovers early in that game, they were just Detroit couldn't stop them. Daniels looked amazing. De'Ami Brown is a guy who I don't even think had over 40 receiving yards all regular season. In two playoff games, he's got over 80 in both.
Yeah.
Who is this guy?
I also think that he's going to be the next kind of interesting head coach conversation is Cliff Kingsbury, because I think he's a good coordinator, but I don't think he can do it as a head coach, at least right now. I think he should stay as a coordinator for a while, but a lot of teams are probably going to look at him and say, hey, he'd be a fun head coach for a rookie quarterback. Let's do that. Let's see what happens. Let's say the Raiders just get to him and go, hey, let's do Cliff Kingsbury.
Let's do this.
With a rookie quarterback. Let's see how that goes.
Lane Kiffin all over again.
Yeah, even though there's no good history behind that, because look what happened with him in Arizona.
I think that might be something, though, that really helps Daniels in Washington for a while, is Kingsbury's tenure in Arizona did not go particularly well.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like so Kyler Murray's
It gives him more time.
Yeah. Well, look at Kansas City with Spagnuolo. I mean, they've been able to keep him because his time in St. Louis was so bad.
Right.
I'm not saying, Kingsbury was all of a sudden like a 2-14 coach. It's not that. But he had Kyler Murray. He had, relatively good talent. And
DeAndre Hopkins.
And yet they got to one playoff game, and it was sort of a disaster. All of their offenses every year that he was there, really good in the first half, really bad in the second, or at least were declining in the second half. So that might be something for Washington where you might be able to keep Kingsbury for 2-3, maybe even more years, and really build a really, really solid foundation for Daniels to build what's already been an amazing start to his career. He has the best rookie season for a quarterback ever.
Yeah, I think
the numbers in terms of like passing touchdowns. No, there have been guys that have more passing touchdowns, more yards. But in terms of what he has meant for a franchise, and this could be just me, but because I do kind of value the playoffs more than literally anything else, maybe almost to a detriment. To get two playoff wins, both on the road, and to be in the NFC Championship your first year, this is going to be the worst roster Daniels has.
Yeah.
For the next 5-6 years.
And it's also interesting, too, because you look at – I remember when Eric Bieniemy went to Washington a couple years ago now.
Yeah, to coach Sam Howell.
Yeah, and it was it wasn't that you expected things to work, but you kind of wondered how it was going to go because he had all of this – seemingly all of this success in Kansas City, and then it doesn't work out in Washington. And now Washington, boom, on their next guy.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of figure it out. And again, like you said, I think Kingsbury could be there for a while because of the fact that, one, he might be gun-shy of, you know, being a head coach again. And teams might have the same feeling of, like, I don't want to risk that because look what happened in Arizona. And Washington's just going to sit there and say, cool, thanks.
Yeah, you can stay here. We're going to get a new stadium. You're now working with a quarterback in Daniels, who is awesome. And you look around the rest of the NFC. By the middle of next year, you might have, like, unanimously, definitively, the best quarterback in that conference.
Yeah, because that – oh, man. You want to talk about differences in conference. Look at the AFC to the NFC with the quarterback position.
Yep.
It is –
It is miles apart.
It's bad.
Some other NFC East news. Cowboys writer Clarence Hill Jr. tweeted this out about a half hour ago. Look for the Cowboys to cross the finish line on hiring Brian Schottenheimer no later than Friday, possibly today. Their OC the last 2 years – they've now interviewed him for this head coaching position twice in the last 2 days. So I think that kind of felt definitive.
It's kind of crazy though. Like in 2 days you have two interviews. Like it's pretty quick.
And the first one was like 4 hours. So it was really like obviously already their offensive coordinator, so it really wasn't leaving, but
Right.
They found him quickly.
He's been an OC for 10 years.
Yeah. I think my issue is just they continue to beat to their own drum.
I'm sorry. No, he's been an OC for 14 years.
Oh, okay. So yeah, he's got a lot of experience. Never a head coach. Never. Nope. He beats to the Cowboys beat to their own drum. I mean, no one was putting them in like any of these other head coaching candidates except like Kellen Moore, Deion Sanders, and Brian Schottenheimer. Like those were the three guys. Mm-hmm. And Deion really never got off the ground after like the first 2 days.
That's also big though because if Schottenheimer is going to be the next head coach of the Cowboys, that leaves Kellen Moore. Potential to go to the Saints,
Jaguars, something like that. Yeah,
just I'm just thinking of avenues you can take away.
Joe Brady leaving.
Like
803-0550, the number two call. Gonna stick on the Bills topic here. Get more on the injuries and some of the other news in the NFL. Sal Capaccio joins the show next. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR.
First and 10 from the Kansas City 19-yard line. Josh takes a shotgun snap, looks, steps up, has time, fires to the end zone, caught, touchdown, Buffalo! Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Gabriel Davis again! Are you kidding me? Unbelievable, the Bills get the lead back again.
Anniversary time!
Yay!
Oh, you can't have that attitude. You wanted this.
I'm the one that brought this up because I saw it on Twitter. I'm sorry, everyone. I thought it'd be fitting. I don't know. Now I hate myself.
You heard it, and your mood dropped instantly. You're like, oh no.
Yeah.
Oh no.
All of the memories just came flooding back in from that night. So if anyone can't tell, 13 seconds was 3 years ago today. So that's fun. Man. What a time, right? Like what?
I mean, I can tell you what I was doing because I'll never forget what I was doing when that touchdown pass happens. We got to bring on Sal Capaccio here in a
50
minute.
50 feet out there.
You were out there. At the time I was in the mornings, so I was at home watching the game with my dad and my brother. As the Bills are driving, me and my brother look at each other and we're kind of like, "You were at the perfect game. They'll be home if they win. Wink, wink. What do we do?" Allen scores. I had tickets ready to buy. I was literally just waiting to see the end of the game.
So it's your fault.
Definitively see the end of the game. Kansas City starts driving. The moment it goes to overtime, I just will never forget closing my phone and like saying nothing to my brother. Me and him have never talked about it. But like, I just I closed the phone out. I closed the app. We were done. And that's just like that. That's my lasting impression of 13 seconds. On a happier note, let's go to the Western Hotline. Sal Capaccio joins us. So, Sal, how are we doing?
Oh man, you guys, man.
I'm sorry. I didn't think it was going to hit as hard as it did, but man, it is.
Yeah,
it's riding high now.
Well, can I? I know. I just said that, but I've shared this story before, and I'll share it again. Because I think that, you know, it's time that we kind of, we're turning the page this weekend on this, right? This is going to be, you know, I thought this morning even, if slash when the Bills win Sunday, it'll never take away 13 seconds, but doesn't it really ease a lot of it? You know what I mean? Do you think like, okay, you can get by it a little bit more? For me, what happened was on the sidelines, the way it works is towards the end of the game, when the Bills are going to win, I start lining up who I'm going to interview for the post-game on-field interview for the radio broadcast. And I in a national game, I go to Tracy Wolfson or Evander Washburn, whoever it was. In this case, it was Tracy. And I say, who are you getting? And they always get Josh after the game. And we were doing that. And I said to Tracy, who are you getting? She said, Josh and Gabe. I said, great. And I started thinking about who I was going to want to talk to. And then the kickoff happened and then another play. And so I automatically start kind of like, ooh, I gotta wait here, see what happens, and then everything happened. But we were lining up everything we needed to do after the game, and then obviously everything changed. And I'll never, ever, ever forget walking off that field and the juxtaposition of emotions and watching. And here's Josh, who just played this unbelievable game, obviously, and he's walking off, and no one's really around him saying anything, right? Because he's walking off. Jordan Poyer was like crouched down, very emotional. I remember seeing him and walking up to him. Devin Singletary was on the bench, didn't move, just kind of had his arms sprawled on each side of the bench. And then I look over and there's Patrick Mahomes and all these cameras just following him, right? And like, it was just, it's a terrible, terrible feeling in that moment, right? And so I just said to you guys, oh, my, you know, don't go there. But, you know, hey, I think you also have to kind of remember those things and how much they meant to you to be on one side to make it, you know, when you get a chance to be on the other side and how appreciative you are of how hard it takes to work to get there. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I being back here during all that, too, I remember how quick the rest of the night went. Like, it went from all of a sudden it was, okay, the fourth quarter's ending, we're going to overtime, and then, like, you blink, and I'm in my car on my way home, like, 2 hours later, 3 hours later. Like, it was so fast how everything happened, and I've been thinking about that a lot for this game, too. Like we're all just kind of waiting all day for Sunday night, as the saying goes, but how fast is this game going to go by when it actually gets to 6:30? You know, like, win or lose, like, It feels like one of those games where like you get so hyped up for it and then it happens and boom, it's gone like that. And that's kind of something that I'm trying to be mindful of as this gets closer, because I don't want to, like, you know, just kind of not necessarily gloss over the game, but then all of a sudden, like, you know, realize, wow, it's over, you know, win or lose. And it feels like one of those games are so, like, where there's so much hype and excitement around it that can kind of happen sometimes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course. And I mean, I think last week and this week are very similar for me in this regard, where, you know, my wife said to me last night, like, you know, how are you doing with everything? And I'm like, you just want to get to Sunday. I say the buildup is worse than the game itself. I say once I'm on the field and the game starts, it's a football game. You know what the stakes are, but you're playing. You're doing your job, right? That's what it is. You're doing your job and you're watching the game and you know what the stakes are, but you also know that it's a long game. It's 60 minutes and it can go back and forth and a lot of different things can happen. And you're right. Once it's over, it's over. Now, I would say if they do win this game Sunday, I don't think it's going to be a short night for you, you know, because there's a lot that goes on. And I remember in 2021, it was the year after COVID, but we weren't, like, the radio crew is now on the team, is on the team charter, right? In 2020, I did not go to the championship game. We did not call the game from Kansas City. We were in Buffalo. So I've not had a chance to be on site for a championship game. Since I was a fan, but not in this scenario. In 2021, we were traveling, but we couldn't be on the charter due to NFL regulations. So we were traveling commercially, right? And so we stayed back. Well, there was no flight out of Kansas City late that night. You weren't getting out from Kansas City to Buffalo. I remember staying in Kansas City that night, and the team flies back, and honestly, in the hotel, and I'll never forget it, I woke up in the middle of the night, guys. It had to be 3 a.m. maybe. I'm in the hotel in Kansas City. And have you ever like woke up and thought, did everything just happen? Was that real? What just happened? Mm-hmm. Like, I really thought that. Like, it almost felt like, wait a minute, did that really happen? And then you realize, yep, I'm in Kansas City. That really happened. And that was like a second round of it for me.
Yeah. Oh, I can fully agree with that. I mean, I was working the mornings, getting up at 4 or 5 a.m. and I'm like, all right, that did happen. Like, it's going to be a long day now, and it's going to be a long off season. But like, see, like to your point, you brought it up too. Like, we're kind of turning the page. Like, it's another chapter in this rivalry. Yep. And I've mentioned it a lot this week too. There's no scientific point to it or anything like that. It feels different. 2020 was so fresh, so new for a lot of us, especially, you know, guys like me and Josh's age. We don't have the 90s. We had, you know, the stories from our parents or, you know, our relatives, what have you. So it was different. Now this feels like, okay, you've been here, you've done this, you're experienced. I know there's only, Josh, would you say, like 14 players on the Bills that have played in the championship 14. Game.
Chiefs has 43.
Yeah, but us as fans, like, we've been here and through this. And it's just, it feels different to me. It really does. I think both these teams play so similarly. The difference is, I think the Bills are playing that style better. The records may not show it, but I think they are just playing better.
Yeah, I think this matchup, you know, we've seen the Bills win, you know, this year and even over the last couple of years. I know last year not in the playoffs itself. I think it can be a good matchup for the Bills in certain aspects. There's certain things that concern me. To your point about how they've played, I just read Thad Brown tweet this out, which is amazing. The Bills and Chiefs have combined for one giveaway since week 11 when they played. Combined. Since that game, there's been one giveaway. You know who that was? Josh Allen throwing an arm punt against the New England Patriots. That's it. Unbelievable. No turnovers for either side. And I really believe, guys, like this game, I do think that this game is going to be like kind of the Ravens game where at the end of the game, whoever loses, the talking point will be, I can't believe they made a couple mistakes that they haven't made. You know, Lamar had been really good at taking care of the football this year, but then he had two turnovers. And the talking point was, two turnovers and in the playoffs. And listen, Josh Allen has been great at protecting the football. Patrick Mahomes has been great at protecting the football. Both these offenses, their running backs, their receivers. Mark Andrews was too. For years, 5 years. And then he had the drops, but he had the turnover. And I do think that this game, whichever it comes down to, I think that whoever makes that one critical mistake is probably the team that's going to wind up losing. Don't let it be you to be the team that gives up the ball in a critical situation and stop a drive. I think that's what this game comes down to.
Yep, I am in complete agreements. On the Western Hotline, Sal Capaccio. Sal, we did get our first injury report yesterday. It was, of course, a walkthrough. Just from what it looks like, pretty good news. Dawkins is kind of the different name. I don't think he was mentioned when Sean McDermott was speaking to you guys. He did miss with an illness yesterday. But Christian Benford, still in concussion protocol, but limited. Matt Milano, not really, I guess, a hamstring injury, more being called hamstring soreness. He was limited as well. So all in all, it seems, and then, of course, Taylor Rapp as well, day-to-day, did not practice. But it seems all in all, the first practice of the week, pretty good signs.
Yeah, for sure. I'm more concerned with Taylor Rapp at this point for me personally, just kind of reading the report and trying to read the tea leaves, right? What Sean talks about and how I know he says day to day, but he didn't practice yesterday and he looked in a lot of pain. I was down there when he got out of the tent and he was in a lot of pain in that hip and he gets carted off and you know, that's tough. So I'm more concerned about that, plus the fact that you have a rookie behind him who'd be playing against a Patrick Mahomes offense where they would probably attack that, right? We've seen the Bills give up a couple long passes recently. Last week, one to Rashad Bateman. The week before that, one to the Denver Broncos. So I think that concerns me. I'm not as concerned about Matt Milano for the fact that McDermott called it soreness, not an injury, and he was limited yesterday, nor Christian Benford as much, but obviously, concussion protocol, you never know where that's going to go. So you always have to, you know, keep that in mind. But the fact that he was limited on Wednesday, you know, is good news. Hopefully, Deion Dawkins returns to practice today, though, guys. That is something to monitor. He did miss yesterday with an illness. So hopefully he's back as well today. We'll be down at One Bills Drive practice at 12:30 p.m. today. It'll be a regular practice, not a walkthrough like yesterday was.
And then, Sal, before we get you out of here, I do want to get your thoughts on some of the coaching and general manager hirings going on around the NFL. Josh McDaniels goes back to Old Faithful with the New England Patriots, a third stint as their offensive coordinator dating back all the way to 06. And then I think maybe the most surprising thing of the offseason to this point, Jacksonville does a complete 180, fires Trent Baalke after – maybe they're connected, maybe not – but after the news in the morning that Liam Cohen, the offensive coordinator of Tampa Bay, pulling himself out of consideration, I mean, what's going on in Jacksonville? And I'm seeing Ian Rapoport, you know, mentioning 20 or so minutes ago, Joe Brady could be in line to go there potentially as a head coach.
Yeah, I've seen that as well, that Joe Brady is getting a little bit more love as far as the Jacksonville Jaguars and a head coach, you know, interview possibility. So we'll see. You know, this is what happens when you get down here and you have success and teams are still looking and searching. And, you know, well, it would be a great opportunity for Joe Brady, no doubt about it. You wouldn't love to see him leave the Buffalo Bills because of what he's done with Josh Allen and with this offense. And obviously, you know, if the Bills were to lose this weekend, then if the Jags are that interested, they could move on him. If not, they're going to have to wait. You know, and I think Joe Brady's handled this the right way so far all along. You know, last week, him and Todd Monken both had virtual interviews, the Ravens offensive coordinator, and a lot of talk was about distractions and things like that. You know, and right now, you know, Joe Brady, he wouldn't be able to interview this week. So, you know, he's focused on the Kansas City Chiefs. I know that. If the Bills happen to win, good for Joe Brady to have that opportunity. And there's a couple weeks before, you know, the next game, which will be the Super Bowl. So, yeah, I wouldn't doubt if he is definitely in the mix there.
All right, Sal, let's get ready for practice today, and we'll be listening for you tomorrow as well right here on the Extra Point Show. Thanks, man. We'll talk again soon.
All right, you got it. Thanks.
That was Sal Capaccio there on the West Her Hotline. And, yes, he also did bring up, too, with Dawkins missing with an illness. That is going to be something to monitor today. Right now I'm feeling pretty good about it, but if it's, you know, did not practice for a second day in a row due to an illness, I'll start to get a little bit nervous. 803-0550, the number two call. Going to take a quick timeout here before we take our next timeout. Sabres Live coming up at the top of the hour as the Sabres are back in action tonight, taking on the Calgary Flames, 9 p.m. start time, 8 p.m. pregame, both right here on WGR. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everyone. Quick final segment here as we wrap up a Thursday here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. We weren't able to get connected to too many fans here in the second hour. We had Alex Brasky at 11, Sal Capaccio there in our last segment at 11:30. But when we do get connected, it's brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. We do have a Sabres game tonight. Does a 9 o'clock start time, Josh, fit into the Sabres after dark category?
Yeah.
You think
yeah,
so?
Okay. You're out west. Okay. You're playing Calgary. Like, it's...
It kind of also matters on the team you're playing, yeah, where it's like, it's Calgary.
It also matters the time of year, though.
Mm.
Well, actually, no. Never mind. It's never light at 9 o'clock during Sabre season. Never mind.
No,
take
that's
back.
Right.
But it's always dark.
But so we're counting 9 o'clock as Sabres after dark?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Cause, well, and also think about it, too. Think about, I think this conversation came up a few years ago because I remember my rationale for what is and what isn't Sabres after dark. If the puck drop for the game happens after what would be the start of a normal third period in a 7 o'clock game,
okay.
Then it's Sabres after dark.
Okay.
Because think about it. In a normal 7 o'clock game, you're probably already in the third period or about to start the third period at 9 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's like the cutoff. 8:30, not Sabres after dark. It's like Sabres at twilight.
Sabres is why. Well, that's not going to catch on. I don't think it's going to catch on.
Yeah, no, I know it's not.
I completely understand the sentiment. I don't think Sabres after twilight is going
to
catch on.
Listen, I'm just trying to be an innovator, okay?
No, I think you're right,
You have to make wrong decisions to become an innovator.
That's right. You have to fail a few times. Yeah. You usually won't be respected in your day and age. It's usually after
first
you die.
First, you don't succeed. Whoa. All right.
No, yeah. It's like
Sabres after twilight is going to catch on in, what, 80 years now then?
Exactly. It's like Picasso.
All right.
Like in your time, you're like, who's that Picasso guy?
It's just drawings.
And then, like, some random art students in the 1920s were like, this Picasso guy,
it's kind of cool.
It looks like a mess, but, like, I kind of like it. And then, boom, there you go. Da Vinci's, like, one of, like, the few guys I know that was, like, an inventor that, like, in their day and age was like, guy's onto something.
Yeah.
Onto a lot, actually.
Yeah, but that's because nobody was making anything back then.
Yeah.
Like, think about it. Like, when there's nothing to make and someone's making something, you're like, hey, that guy's cooking.
The guy's doing something.
He's
over
doing
in
something
Venice.
Over there.
Sabres playing at 9 o'clock tonight against the Calgary Flames. They did win on Tuesday.
Yuri Kulik
game. 3-point game scored as well against Vancouver, 3-2. Now they play tonight against Calgary. They also have a game on Saturday. That is not Sabres After Dark. It's 4 o'clock in Edmonton. It's not a bad start time
like
though
that.
On Saturday.
Also, note on the Sabres from Elliot Friedman's 32 Thoughts. Supposedly, the Penguins are interested in some of the Sabres NHL-ready prospects. Again, that's from Elliot Friedman. Mm-hmm. Not naming names. There was no names mentioned in the article, but it's all you got so far in terms of trade chatter recently.
Love that for them. That's going to do it for me and Josh. Coming up next, more on the Sabres. Sabres Live, on the way next. This is WGR.